We shall pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe to assure the survival and the success of liberty.
American prosperity is the bedrock of freedom and security all over the world.
An obligation to the heritage of liberty and dignity handed down to us by our forefathers.
It's time for the Pro-America Report with Ed Martin on The Answer San Diego.
Hey, welcome to the Pro-America Report. This is Ryan Haidt. Glad to be with you today, joining in on the fun after this incredible Super Tuesday that we have had. Wow, what a Super Tuesday it was. Ha ha. But I am glad to be here. We're going to break it down and talk a little bit about a few things that you need to know. Plus, we've got a couple of great interviews coming up here on the Pro America Report today. You don't want to miss it. So sit back, settle in, and get ready. We've got a next hour here of some great politics, culture, and all of the things that are happening in the world around us. So let's get started. First of all, let me remind you, go to proamericareport.com. That's proamericareport.com. There you can find everything that Ed is working on, things that he's writing, his long form, that is his Substack that you will want to subscribe to. You can also go to phyllisschlafly.com. There you'll find all of the archives of the Pro America Report, this program, including all of our standalone guests, full podcasts, and the notes and resources, the links, but most importantly, the sign-up page for the Wink email, the What You Need to Know email that hits your inbox every weekday morning at 8 a.m. Eastern, all the concurrent time zones. You want to get on that list because it is a very valuable email that comes very short, very quick, very easy into your inbox, gives you a few key things that you need to know about for your day. And boy, were there a few more than a few this morning. As Super Tuesday commenced yesterday, we had primaries around the country in the GOP presidential and the Democratic presidential, but we're not going to focus on that. Actually, I want to come back around to the Democrat presidential primary process here in the wrap-up. I've got a couple of things that I want to talk about, but that's not what I want to focus on first. What I mainly want to focus on, what I'd like to talk about today, is what we saw in the Republican side. And I mean, what you need to know is it wasn't so much Super Tuesday as it felt like Super Smash Tuesday. And it showed an incredible Trump landslide. And I think that this is indicative of more than just one political election cycle. I think that this is indicative of where we are as a nation. And there's a lot of pieces to put together. There's a lot of different things and nuances to kind of look at. But when you consider as a whole where we are as a nation right now, there is a big divide. And people want to talk about a civil war on the Republican side, which it really isn't. But there is definitely a conflict. There is an old guard and there is a new guard. And we are seeing a commanding lead come out for the new guard, for the modern, the new conservative movement. What that means to be a conservative, what it means politically to be on the right, to be America first. These principles and this new direction are moving away from the Bush era globalism, from the Bush era republicanism, and it is being resoundingly that whole section of republicanism, of conservatism, is being, I believe, resoundingly smacked down in the repudiation of Nikki Haley at the polls. Because that is absolutely what she represents. That old guard is 100% the facade, the campaign that she put together. And it no longer makes sense. I think that in a world where the veil has been pulled back, the curtain has been removed. We've all seen The Wizard. There's your reference for a good old movie. We've all seen The Wizard, and it's none too impressive. In fact, The Wizard is working against us. The Wizard is not for we the people. The Wizard is not for democracy or for our republic or for a representative form of government. The Wizard is for himself, and the Wizard's bureaucratic minions work all over the agencies for themselves to enhance their own power and their own influence and their own wealth. And we say no, absolutely not. And if you are on the right, if you're a Republican that represents that kind of continuing administrative state, absolutely not. The incredible things that have been drummed up against Donald Trump never cease to amaze me. The excuses and the again, the anti-Trump movements, the anti-Trump, I shouldn't say movements, but arguments that come up. It really is pretty interesting, because when you look at a perspective of American liberty, when you start to look at the principles upon which we were founded, where we're going as a nation versus where we came from, there is undeniably a choice, a crux that we have in this moment. And I don't mean to say 2024 is the most important election. We hear that enough. That's a tired line. But this time in history that we're in, this last few years, the last two election cycles, we've been moving this direction. And 2016, I think, just cracked it wide open. 2020 was a very interesting. 2020 was a very interesting time, and we could go into that at length. But 2024, I believe, is the next huge hallmark moment in this time that we're in. Because it really has become a battle of not left versus right, liberal versus conservative. That's not at all what we're talking about now. What we are dealing with now is an epic battle of we the people versus they the powerful. The regular, everyday Americans versus the elites. This other class of people that seeks to rule over all of the rest of us. It is just absolutely mind-bogglingly Orwellian. The more layers you go into it and peel back and look at, and this the layers of censorship and propaganda and the absolute lies that we've witnessed from our own government, from these people who are supposed to answer to us, it's shocking. The more layers we peel back and look at the situation, and I believe that this commanding lead, nearly unanimous, although at this point the only chink in the armor so far from Donald Trump's perfect record is Vermont yesterday, which is, and I have to check actually, maybe make sure that the numbers haven't changed that much, but Vermont, Nikki Haley still hadn't cracked 50%. She couldn't get a majority. It was a plurality, but also looking at the numbers, it becomes pretty quickly apparent that there's a lot of Democrat votes in that Republican primary. If you look at the overall total votes and past elections, it very quickly you realize that plurality, not even a majority, but that plurality that was delivered for Nikki Haley yesterday was not delivered at the hands of Republicans. It was delivered at the hands of a very, very mixed bag of Democrats participating in the Republican primary. But that's neither here nor there. It does not detract in any way, shape, or form from the very commanding lead that's being given to Donald Trump in this GOP primary process. And it is not like the left would have you believe that the Republican Party base is just demoralized and this is a few radicals that are showing up at the primaries. No, these are wild and huge historic numbers. When you look backward over 2020, 2016, all the way through, Donald Trump is being delivered historic numbers, and he's being treated as if he were an incumbent, which for all intent and purpose, he almost is. I mean, again, this is a whole conversation we could go into about 2020, but on the Republican side of the primary politics, he really is the incumbent. He's being treated as what he kind of is. So if this is truly the most unpopular, dangerous man in America that so many people have a problem with, what's up? How is all this stuff being handed over to him in this massive landslide, state by state by state? Notably, two different states, Colorado and Maine, which is just wonderful to see. It warms the heart to see such huge decisive victories in these two states that very recently, up and through Monday, tried to delete him from their ballots and were told, yeah, no, even by the liberals on the Supreme Court, no, you can't do that. That's not how that works. He is being delivered historic victories, this supposedly unpopular, dangerous, unhinged man. You know why? Because he's not unpopular. Because the majority of Americans, particularly on the Republican side, don't seem to see him as dangerous or particularly unhinged. In fact, they see him as being one of the only ones, bull in a china shop or not, your cup of tea or not, when it comes to character qualities or choice of language and speech or whatever it is. It's about one of the few dudes out there who's saying what he thinks and saying what we think the truth actually is behind so many of these situations as the layers get peeled back of power and corruption and influence. And this guy has done nothing but do what he thinks is right and get punished for it. There is no self interest that he has in this except to speak the truth. He certainly hasn't gotten rich off of it, and he certainly hasn't gotten more popular off of it, which is the case with so many of these others. They either become popular or rich, and he has lost both of those things. There is no logical reason why he's running except that we must believe him. We got to think that he's telling the truth. And guess what? I think that that is, in fact, the prevailing thought. I think that's a particularly prevailing thought across Republicans, including a lot of independents. I think we're seeing that delivered in the primary results. And that is why we had this super smackdown of epic proportions, Super Smash Tuesday yesterday, because people are done with the old guard. People are done with the establishment, the deep state, the kingmakers. You call it what you want. Phyllis called them the kingmakers in the 60s. We're calling it the deep state now. We are done with this. We, the people, again, want a representative government, not an administrative permanent state that exists for its own benefit and glorification and that sees itself as the center of the universe. In fact, as we've discussed about several times, the center of every dimension, including the spiritual, this religion of government and statism. It's terrible, and I think Americans are done with it. Let it be so. Let it be so. That is what I'm taking away from Super Tuesday. I think it is a huge, huge landslide that is coming again. Absent fraud, this is something that we're going to have to see. Obviously, the states and governments and entities are working overtime to interfere in this election at the very outset, even trying to get someone off the ballot. So we will see what this interference does. But in the meantime, the voters are handing a landslide to Trump, and I think it's indicative of where we are. So come on back. We're going to have a couple of great guests, and I want to talk a little bit about the Democrat primary here in the wrap-up. You don't want to miss it. Be back here, proamericareport.com, phyllisschlafly.com, and we will talk to you right after the break here on the Pro America Report.
Welcome back. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. A very, very interesting topic. We've been talking a little bit about it. I recorded my radio commentaries, which I record in the first week of March. They're running in April, so they're always a little bit evergreen. And I was one of the 3-minute commentaries that I recorded was on AI. And I think everybody's, if they're not struggling, they just are trying to figure out how to think about it. And our next guest is someone who has thought a lot about it and understands what's going on. His name is Nathaniel Palmer. He is a longtime pioneer. Automation, digital transformation, has worked on in both the private and the government sector on big initiatives. And he has a new book, which is out, called Gigatrends, 6 Forces That Are Changing the Future for Billions. It's out from our friends at Post Hill Press. You can get it wherever you sell books. So first of all, welcome, Nathaniel. How are you, sir?
Thank you, Ed. Great.
So the piece that ran on Fox News that I tagged your co-author with another fellow, don't think of our AR future as humans versus machines. Instead, consider these possibilities. So my first question is, they don't really know what to make of robots. They don't know what to make of AI. So that seems like the first problem. I don't think people really have it's almost like a science fiction, and it's here.
Yeah. Yeah. it's evolving faster than we can even really keep pace with, mentally, in terms of understanding it, and less controlling it. And a lot of it, and the scary part of AI is the stuff that we can't see. And that is now manifesting. We're seeing great bad examples of that, the debacle that Google had with Gemini and its woke generation of things that were fictitious, but also exposing bias. But then the issue is, it's kind of obvious where you're coming from with that, but the observability of how they would reach conclusions like that, that's the scary part, where we have algorithms affecting our lives. So the part of the article of shining a more optimistic light on it, part of that it anticipates where things are going with having observable, or a term that I've used is ethical automation.
Right.
Rather than having algorithms making decisions that we have no visibility into, we have no means to appeal, instead being able to use AI to come up with things that allow computers to do what computers do well, but allow humans to be in control of decisions and actions, and to be able to put rules and guardrails in place so that it's doing what we tell it to do, as opposed to it's doing things that we really can't account for or even explain how it occurs.
Nathaniel Palmer, again, is our guest, author of a new book, which I will put a link up. It's called Gigatrends, Six Forces That Are Changing the Future for Billions. We're talking right now a little bit about AI and some of his column essay that ran over at Fox News. I told my sons, I got children 19 years down to 12 years old, and four of them. And I was saying, it feels like a lot of AI right now is knowing you're going to have to know how to be a communicator to know how to talk to AI, meaning you're going to have to know how to say the right things and then check if it did what you wanted. So you can't escape the, you can get it. And here's one that I happened the other day. My son went and did on one of the AIs, he did a summary of a 100-page document, and it came back a 2-page summary, and it was darn useful, right? And it took whatever, 50 seconds, 30 seconds, 10 seconds. I don't know. And my point is if you know what to ask, but what's the real story? Can it be alive? Can it be creative? Can it make decisions based on what? Based on massive checks of preferences, like what you'd like to hear? I mean, it's interesting. It's not alive, but it's got a lot of characteristics of live things.
It's mimicking.
Okay,
it's not alive today, and that's a a huge distinction, but it's mimicking us. It's mimicking what we tell it to do. In the case of what we saw with Google's Gemini, it was mimicking what the bias was there. Now, a few years back, Microsoft had launched a chatbot that immediately went rogue and was saying some really nasty things.
Right.
And that's because it was being fed those things. So people were going online, and that's the role of statistical AI, where it's just drawing conclusions based on the data that it's being fed. So it's only as good as the data we give it. The generative AI, where the AI that's creating music and creating art, it's based on what we're feeding it. It's not yet coming up with things that we would not have conceived.
Right.
It can be very useful. On our website for the book, gigatrends.io, we have a series of a half dozen summaries of the book in different foreign languages.
Huh.
All of that, and it's in the voice of my co-author, Tom, but it's not, because it's synthetically generated using AI. The text of it, we fed effectively a ChatGPT version, a full PDF of the book, asked it to give us a 60-second summary of the book based on that. And it's pretty spot on. It's certainly, as the author being able to check it, it's accurate enough that I could say, well, there's nothing there that it said that is wrong. And then asking it to then create that in the voice of Tom, my co-author, first in English, listen to that. And that's,
right.
There's a little bit of nuance there. You could tell that it's not quite right. If you were having a conversation with that, you would be wondering who you're talking to, but it's still pretty darn close.
Right.
Then to be able to turn that into a German version, a Spanish version, mm-hmm. an Italian version, and so forth. That is something that is beyond the capability of Tom or I in terms of, right. of our linguistic capabilities. So in that way, the augmentation of the work that we do, and the promise that AI offers in that way is tremendous. It's not competing with us in that regard. There are certainly things that are done today by human beings that will be done by AI, and some of that is already happening. And in my own work, that's part of what I've done, is to be able to take work that was otherwise requiring human beings to do it, but where there really wasn't any value being added by it being a human doing that, to be able to have that be done by not AI in a complete black box, but a digital worker that is using AI, but is also following a set of rules, and where every decision is applying a rule, and that's being captured and recorded. And that's one of the key differences, again, of this notion of observable AI or
ethical
automation. The notion of ethical AI is also being applied to, where it's getting into it and the type of information it's looking at. But even when we've put the parameters around, the data that it can use, that notion of the ethical aspect of being able to demonstrate how this action was taken or why this decision was reached, rather than it being simply in the algorithm and part of statistics that are not visible or and not tangible to us.
We're talking again with Nathaniel Palmer and talking about his book. And I'm glad you mentioned that. Gigatrends.io. We'll put that up too about his book just out a few weeks ago from our friends at Post Hill Press. One last question. We just got about a minute and a half left. Is it going to take away a lot of jobs? I mean, it's going to create jobs too, I assume, but is it going to take, are we going to see computer programming jobs change? Are you going to see, I don't know, lawyers, some lawyers' jobs? What do you need to draft? Why would I trust Joe Sixpack to draft a lawyer, a will, if I could use a very endowed AI? Right. I mean, are we going to see that kind of change?
We are, and we're starting to see that already. It's incumbent upon us to think through what we're putting in place and what we're willing to accept.
Right.
And, you know, having those limitations. But just as you're describing about with your son, that notion is what's now called prompt engineering.
Yeah.
That you can create computer software by asking the right questions and doing things in a natural language.
Yeah. That's yeah. It's going to be big. Unfortunately, Nathaniel, sorry, I'm out of time, but I'm glad we connected and I'm glad I got your information. We'll get you back on. This is an important topic. Good luck with the book. Thank you for being out here and look forward to talking again.
Great. Thank you, Ed.
All right. Nathaniel Palmer, everybody. Again, I will make sure to put these links up, but the best one right now, I've now got a better look at it, gigatrends.io. You can see the book and lots of other aspects of it, testimonials and some infographics, too. So check that out, and we'll take a break. We'll be right back. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Back in a moment. Welcome back. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Our next guest, we were just again talking offline. Conversation is fascinating. His name is James Herson. He has a law degree, but also a degree in media psychology. He's a best-selling author, and you'll see his stuff over at Newsmax. I'm not sure for how long, but I've seen it for a long time. He's been a law professor at Trinity Law School and has just been a very interesting and important voice in what's going on. It's jamesherson.com, H-I-R-S-E-N. So welcome, sir. How are you?
Great to be with you, Ed. Doing well.
Well, thank you. Yeah, before we get into what we were getting ready to talk about, I want to digress for a second, because you're a law professor as well as a lawyer, member of the California Bar, Washington, D.C. Bar. In this case, it's particularly apropos because, you know, Dean Eastman is being attacked in the California Bar, his law license. And down in D.C., Jeff Clark is being attacked. And we're watching such irregular happenings in our legal system, you know, really irregular. If you're a lawyer, and I am too, also, I should have said that in case you didn't know. And so one question for you as an observer, participant, teacher of the law, why aren't more lawyers up in arms over this sort of weaponization it's not abuse of our legal system. It's the corruption of it, small C corruption. It's just not working right in DC and other places. And what surprises me is there's not more lawyers standing up saying this isn't right. Even no matter what your politics are, you used to see lawyers be in agreement on sort of the quality of the endeavor. What am I missing that?
I think there are a lot of lawyers standing up, but, you know, your question was, is it abuse or is it corruption? It's both. It's both. And there's going to be, I mean, it's going to take a long time, but a lot of this stuff, the weaponization of institutions, the disregard of norms, the unthinkable use of the legal system in a political way for election interference, for political vendettas, these are going to create causes of action inevitably in the civil system. And there's going to be tons of those causes of action. The problem, of course, is, you know, when we talk about abusive process, malicious prosecution, generally you have to conclude the case before you bring those actions, but it'll happen eventually. One of the other things, I think, a phenomenon, you know, you asked the question about the lawyers. I think people are intimidated. I think people are feeling afraid of governmental institutions when they see the kind of surveillance, investigatory abuse, legal process abuse, all of this stuff. It affects them. And that was the intent. I mean, you mentioned John Eastman. John Eastman is a great man, a great professor, former dean, a lawyer. And what he proposed was perfectly reasonable and constitutional.
Right.
And the notion that somehow he should be deprived of his right to practice his profession is an outrage. It's outrageous. And it's amazing. You know, one would think that there would be more judges, particularly more lawyers, independent lawyers who would speak out. But there's quite a few courageous lawyers. I have to say, you know, I'm actively involved in appellate law. It's kind of a hobby. And especially at the Supreme Court level, I have like more than three dozen amicus briefs that I've filed on controversial cases. And I'm always heartened by how many public interest lawyers there are, how many public interest legal organizations that are out there fighting for fundamental rights. What's really shockingly missing is the ACLU.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. Yeah. The civil libertarians, they used to say, I don't care if you're conservative. I just don't want government overreaching. By the way, our guest is James Herson. Again, jamesherson.com. And but let me slide to this Christian nationalist thing, because you have a blog post up on your website, jamesherson.com. And highlighting one thing that you write about is that at one point, this MSNBC, this Politico reporter, Heidi Prisbola, talks about a belief in a notion that rights come from God is an indicator of Christian nationalism. Well, she got no less than Bishop Robert Barron, who's a pretty prolific communicator on the semi-conservative center right of the Catholic Church. And he took her to task and responded to that and said, among other things, this is opening the door to totalitarianism. In other words, her willingness, he says, to forget the principles that our rights come from God and not from the government is the basic problem. I think that's right. My question for you, James, two things is, one, Christian nationalism, that's like a slur, right? And it kind of works. It's nobody wants to be called that. But as you say at the end of your document, if it means you believe in God and you believe America, you know, something you love and you love all people, well, that's kind of what it is. I mean, is this like an Orwell thing where they're just taking language from us and therefore, you know, trying to cause people to be upset with each other?
Yes, it is. It is a psyop. It is an information war tactic right out of 1984. And you can see it very clearly when you talked about Presbola, the Politico senior investigative reporter who wrote a piece about this. But she essentially said, and the reason she brought out a whole bunch of people of faith, including Bishop Barron, is because she said, if you believe rights come from God, then you must be a Christian nationalist, which is insane, because that's a sine qua non essential part of what our republic was built on. You know, our formational document, the Declaration of Independence, it states it explicitly that we are endowed by our Creator with certain essential rights. They don't come from government. If you look at UN documents on human rights, they're voluminous. They say that rights emanate from the state, and the state can take them away. That's what the old Soviet Union said. That's what Cuba's constitution says. That's what all tyrannies embrace. That's why Karl Marx was against Christianity. And so this idea is right out of the founding fathers of communism. And that's why Bishop Barron said, And it was ominous, this is opening the door to totalitarianism, because this kind of thinking does that. Of course, it's a tactic. It came from multiple sources. Rob Reiner has this documentary out, and he pretty much equates the term Christian nationalist with white supremacy, racism. And that, to me, you can see it, what they're trying to do. It's the same thing that the regime did with the phrase MAGA Republicans.
Right. MAGA extremists. MAGA extremists. They added extremists to it. MAGA. Well, anyway, keep going. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Yeah, well, she used Prisbola said that this was an extremist element of conservative Christians. But Reiner, in his so-called film, it's really kind of a fake film, he attacked the Heritage Foundation. He painted with a broad brush. He attacked Charlie Kirk's Turning Point USA. He attacked Hillsdale College. They're a part of the extremist Christians. It's absolutely ludicrous, but it has a purpose. It's trying to create, as you said correctly, an Orwellian attack phrase. Similar to, you know, the MAGA. I mean, I know they said MAGA extremists, but you hear the president say MAGA Republicans all the time, blaming them for everything that he's created. He blames them for it. So this is another example of a tactic. It's coming from multiple sources, and it has to be resisted. Yeah. Or you just say, explain what a Christian nationalist is. Someone who is a Christian who loves the country, and say, you know, this isn't a pejorative. This
is you got to try to reclaim. Right, try to take it back. Yeah, I get that. That's an option. It feels hard to do. James Herson, I'm sorry, I'm out of time. James Herson was our guest. His website is jamesherson.com. That's H-I-R-S-E-N. Very good website and a good guy to listen to. James Herson and subheading Culture, Law, and Business Analysis. There's a lot of there. So check it out. And we'll take a break and be right back. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Back in a moment.
This is the Phyllis Schlafly Report, a daily commentary continuing the conservative pro-family legacy of Phyllis Schlafly. Now, the president of Phyllis Schlafly Eagles, Ed Martin.
A strong president is essential to hold our vast country together, as President Andrew Jackson did in the 1820s and 30s. Joe Biden kicked off his presidential campaign with two extraordinary divisive speeches in which he demonized and declared political war on Trump supporters. In his remarks, Biden demonstrated his discordant campaign strategy of defining MAGA Republicans as enemies of America, when it's Biden who is failing with his weak leadership. Prominent Democrats are increasingly voicing doubts that Biden can win again. Even Congressman Jim Clyburn of South Carolina, who's credited with delivering the nomination to Joe Biden in 2020, stated that the Democrats' problem is, quote, that we have not been able to break through that MAGA wall, end quote, of support for Trump. Trump's primary rivals candidly doubt whether an apparent election of the totally incompetent Biden would even be legitimate at this point. And they all stated during the race that they would not necessarily accept a reported election result, declaring Biden to be the winner. Even Nikki Haley has said that she would wait until all the prosecutions of Trump have been completed and all the appeals are exhausted, which, by the way, may take many years, before she would consider pardoning him if she were president. This ongoing circus of politicized prosecutions continues to needlessly divide our country. Most Republicans continue to reject the liberal narrative about the protests at the Capitol on January 6, 2021, which just had a 3-year anniversary earlier this year. Elise Stefanik of New York accurately described those who remain imprisoned as hostages. In the growing disunity under Joe Biden, the mayor of New York City just sued bus companies for merely transporting illegal aliens from Texas to New York City. Since all these migrants were released on parole by the Biden administration to go wherever they wish, private buses should not be subject to this unprecedented retaliation for facilitating their travel. With all the challenges we face, it's time to find reasons to come together. And that certainly doesn't look like what Joe Biden is telling us to do.
This has been the Phyllis Schlafly Report from Phyllis Schlafly Eagles. The hypocrisy and lies of the liberal media are alarming and even incite public unrest. But the fake news and the commentators who slant coverage are finally being exposed. At PhyllisSchlafly.com, we promise to provide timely alerts and take effective action on your behalf. That's PhyllisSchlafly.com. Thanks for listening, and join us next time for the Phyllis Schlafly Report.
Hey, welcome back to the Pro America Report. This is Ryan Height filling in here today for Mr. Ed Martin. Glad to be here. Thank you for letting me be a part of the show today. And it's been a good one. Good couple of guests there and a great starting off to the show. Well, I mean, I don't mean to pat myself on the back too much. This is talking about Super Tuesday. But again, I am excited by the Super Tuesday results. I think that it's a landslide, not just for Trump. I think that it shows a landslide for moving forward in a good and a better, in a different direction for the Republican Party, for the conservative movement here in America. And that is definitely countered by an interesting thing that's happening on the other side of the aisle. And that's what I want to talk about here in the wrap-up. Just real quick at the end of the show, before we do, though, let me remind you, go to ProAmericaReport.com. That's Ed's Substack. You'll be able to see what he's writing about, talking about long form. Often coincides with the show. And, of course, go to ProAmericaReport.com. Or, I'm sorry, PhyllisSchlafly.com. That is where you'll find the archives of the Pro America Report, the podcast standalone segments, the news and links and all of the different resources that we talk about on the show, as well as that's where you can sign up for the wonderful Wink, the daily email every weekday that comes into your inbox first thing in the morning. Very important. Go and sign up for that at PhyllisSchlafly.com. Find Ed's Substack at ProAmericaReport.com. You will not regret either of those decisions. I promise they will be good for your future 2024 news and opinion consumption. But what we are here to wrap up the show and talk about is the Democrat primary that is happening right now. What primary, you say? There's an incumbent president. Well, it's a little bit more complicated than that. Now, don't hear me overblowing anything, because I think that you'll see a lot of Fox News types, no offense, but kind of, say, you know, oh, tens of thousands of uncommitted voters voted yesterday not for Biden. Well, that's true. They did. There were many, many, many votes. But here's what it means. This is interesting. And you'll hear a lot of people, I think, try to overblow this. This doesn't exactly electorally put Joe Biden at risk of losing his own primary. Nowhere near it. However, there have been an incredible amount of protest votes for no one, literally for no one, for either for uncommitted, for no particular preference. Joe Biden is not losing per se, but he is losing tens of thousands of votes in some different states. Yesterday we saw it in Minnesota, Alabama, several places, I think Virginia as well. A pretty significant percentage points of the Democrat primary went to either uncommitted or someone else, none of these candidates, whatever the different language is. It's a pretty significant protest. Now, make no mistake, there are different reasons. It's not that the Democrat Party is turning conservative, that people are saying, oh, we don't want Joe Biden, he's too far to the left. No, in fact, this is a lot of different pieces of the left saying that Joe Biden isn't left enough, or isn't their version of the left, or isn't whatever it is, fill in the blank. But regardless of the specifics, whether it is the huge blocks of Muslim voters in Minnesota saying don't vote for Joe Biden because he's been too pro-Israel, or it's, you know, this or that or the other, you put it all together, what you're seeing is what Ed has described as the great civil war in the Democrat Party. And this is the inevitability of what the left has done. The left has put together such a disastrous conglomeration of identity politics, minority victimhood groups, that they are without fail going to at some point implode, because all of these groups have become pitted against each other. There's no way for it all to make sense. There's no way for there to be a cohesive place in which this politically makes sense and can work together, because you've set up these groups as the favorites. You've set up all of this contradictory stuff. I mean, this is, we're seeing this culturally play out in leftist darlings of past years, like the gay and lesbian champions, feminist champions that are running into a real hard conflict with the new transgender fad. And guess what? The left has created these two different monsters that are now at odds with each other. And for those of us who don't buy into any of this leftism, you look at it and go, well, no, of course. No, what's the phrase for my era, from the millennial era? No, duh. That was going to happen at some point. This is the product of what you've done. This is what you've created. Welcome to what happens when you strip out moral truth, when you strip out objective reality, that truth is separate from your own whims and wishes. It doesn't work. Truth is not relative. Well, This is what happens. And I think that electorally, we're starting to see it come back now. Whether it's going to take away, I don't think it's going to ruin Joe Biden's chances. But I think that this does show that there are several chinks in the armor of Democrats this year. Typically, a political movement, a political party that is lockstep with the agenda, with the person, to a fault. 2016, stealing the election from Bernie Sanders, anybody? This is the party that does not have wild hairs outside the boundaries. They are lockstep in unison, and we are seeing disunity this year from all of the monsters that they have created, from all of the various contradictions that they have boiled together here into this noxious stew of leftism. Here we are, and they are fighting each other, and it is going to become more and more and more of a problem. What is a nagging issue now, just a little wound, is festering, and it will be worse. It will get worse. And guess what? It's a product of their own doing. And I'm okay with that. This is a movement that must go away. We don't want communists, Marxists, leftists. This is antithetical to everything that America stands for. This is antithetical to classical liberalism itself, to the principles of liberty and our republic. It needs to go away. If it implodes on itself, so be it. That's what we're seeing happen over on the Democrat side of this republic, presidential primary. And just take a step back and you'll see all of the grave consequences that I think are coming, and very quickly. So how it affects exactly Joe Biden and the choice of running mate this year, we'll see. But that is definitely something to keep an eye on. It is definitely a massive ideological train wreck that we are watching in real time in 2024. So stick with us. We'll talk about it a lot more on the Pro America Report in upcoming days. Thank you to Ed for being such a great host, to Mason, my co-producer, for helping me keep everything on track, and to you for listening. We appreciate it so much. Go to proamericareport.com, phyllisschlafly.com, and we will see you back here tomorrow on another edition of the Pro America Report.